This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we welcome you to another segment of this opening hour of the Forum program. I want to remind listeners that Richard Haass, the head of the Council on Foreign Relations, will be joining us in the second hour of this morning's program. The Golden Hills, the lush valleys, and the rich agricultural lands that surround Bay Area cities make up a landscape that owes its existence to decades of conservation efforts. And a report released just yesterday by the Greenbelt Alliance, a group dedicated to the protection of these lands, finds that an area almost 10 times the size of San Francisco could be developed in a generation. As Bay Area housing demands continue to soar, we're going to hear about the report and how to protect the Greenbelt from the forces of urban sprawl. Let me tell you who is joining us here in studio this morning for this forum segment. I want to welcome, first of all, the present head of the Greenbelt Alliance, Jeremy Madsen, who's actually CEO and also author of At Risk, the Bay Area Greenbelt. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
Also have with us in studio Andrea McKenzie, who's general manager of Open Space Authority of Santa Clara Valley. And we're going to talk with her about what we found out in the Greenbelt Alliance needs to be done there. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Glad to have you both aboard. And, Jeremy, let me begin with you. And this is the seventh at-risk report, I know, that's come out of the Greenbelt Alliance and how the Bay Area handles growth. There's a lot that's being threatened here. There's a lot that's at risk. We realize that. But there's been a lot of progress, too. So sort of give us a balance of those, if you could.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the progress first. So this is, as you said, the seventh report we've done since 1989. Back in 1989, there were 781,000 acres of the Bay Area threatened by sprawl development. You know, today it's 293,000 acres, and the vast majority of those lands have been protected in one form or the other, either permanently protected by agencies like Andrea's agency, or protected better by policies that voters or city councils have put in place. So again, very positive progress we've made, but you know, there's still risks out there. And 293,000 acres, these are watersheds, our wildlife areas, areas that are going to protect us from the effects of climate change going forward. And as you said, an area 10 times San Francisco. So a lot of work still to be done.
A lot of these risks have to do with the crisis in affordable housing. I mean, a lot of the sprawl and a lot of the development is sort of connected to that in a very integral way.
Well, I'd say a lot of the threat has to do with proposals to build housing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's the crisis of affordable housing that we're dealing with or that are threatening these lands. You know, for decades, it has been a kind of a monocrop of single-family sprawl development that's been proposed to pave over our landscapes. What we haven't done enough of in this region is build near public transit within our existing cities and towns, revitalizing our communities, and building a diversity of housing types that are affordable across the income spectrum. And we're very supportive of doing just that so that we can have our great open spaces and also have communities that we can all afford and be proud of.
Well, we're also concerned about environmental issues. I mean, development means you're adding carbon, you're adding cars and so forth. But you've also got to figure in this calculus just the whole rising in population that we're also pretty much confronting in all this. You go into breakdowns, you go into stories, and the breakdowns have to do with risks. For example, risk of it turns out that Contra Costa County is probably most at risk in terms of the whole Bay Area region, looking at sprawl issues, particularly in places like Brentwood, Antioch, Oakley, and Pittsburgh. They can all grow, though, you argue, within city boundaries. And then you've got water in Sonoma, and you've got and that's why we have Andrea McKenzie in here, General Manager, Open Space Authority of Santa Clara Valley. You've got concern Coyote Point, North Coyote, yeah?
Well, Michael, I'd echo what Jeremy said. We've done a good job in the Bay Area with close to 1.4 million acres of protected land, both parks and open space. But we're realizing now that some of the key areas for a sustainable Bay Area, where we grow our local food, where our water resources come from, the last remaining wildlife linkages, those areas aren't necessarily in that protected network of open space, and that is an area we're really focusing on.
And that's what Greenbelt makes the argument for. But talk about specifically Coyote Valley, because that's really where a lot of focus in the report is.
Yeah, there aren't many landscapes left in the greater Bay Area, particularly valley floor, that haven't been developed. Much of our preservation work in the Bay Area has been in the hillsides. Here we have a 7,500-acre natural and agricultural landscape that for decades was the place that Apple or Google, Cisco, Tandem Computers were eyeing for corporate campuses. But for a lot of reasons, particularly the recession, that development never happened. And now as the economy heats up, there are entities looking to develop industrial parks and warehouses on some of that really important land. And when we look at a landscape like Coyote Valley, it is the last remaining linkage for wildlife moving between the Santa Cruz Mountains and the Diablo or Mount Hamilton range, and it overlays the drinking water supply for 1.8 million people. These are the kind of things that we're concerned about.
You also are concerned, again, getting back to population, your fastest growing counties, one of them at least, in the state of California. You're looking at 2030 as a 35% increase in population.
Yeah, about a 36% increase by 2040, mostly tied to the cities of San Jose, Morgan Hill, and Gilroy. So we're really interested in working with those communities on where growth ought to go and where conservation investments ought to be made, because I'd like to echo what Jeremy said. We can have good choices for housing. We can have open space. We can have wildlife habitat and farmland. We have to make wise decisions about those things.
And let me ask Jeremy about some other areas that are focused on in the report. I mean, you've got, as I said, Contra Costa County, 56% of it is farmland now in the county at risk of development, the report points out. But also Solano County, one of every 10 acres at risk, especially around Vacaville.
Right. And in these two counties, Contra Costa and Solano, they really are the front lines of the sprawl fight in the Bay Area, questions of land use. And, you know, these are two counties where we have the opportunity to get it right or the threat of getting it wrong. And so that's why we work very closely with places.
You're saying very loudly in this report, people can stop these things.
People can stop these things. And, you know, I think you actually alluded to it early on that we have stopped these things before. The Bay Area is an incredibly special place, unique among metropolitan regions in this in this country, being able to, you know, go to a great job, go have, you know, dinner at a sidewalk cafe, and then be up in a place that truly feels wild within 30 minutes to go for, like, say, an after dinner hike in the summer. That's because of work that we've done for generations, and we can keep doing that work to protect the places that are still at risk.
We've got your report. We've got Plan Bay Area. We've got SPUR. We've got a lot of things that we've actually featured here in the forum program and paid attention to. And yet, again, there's increasing pressure to build houses everywhere.
Right, right. And I think, again, you know, what we need to do is we need to develop in the right way, in the right places.
We used to call it smart growth, right?
We can call it smart growth. And it's, again, we have the choice of where we can build, where we should build. You know, fortunately, I think most of our cities, most of our planners, increasingly members of the public are saying, again, we want to have the spectacular open spaces of our region, and we want to address the housing crisis. And if we, again, build in the right places, we can take care of that.
Let me just ask you about one other area that you focus on, and then I want to bring our listeners into this. In fact, let me invite those of you listening to join us now. Our toll-free number is available to you, and we welcome your response to what we're talking about here, which is really the new report that's been put out by Greenbelt outlining what is at risk, especially if we pave over Bay Area open spaces. We welcome your phone calls, and you can join us at our toll-free number. That number is 866-733-6786. Please give us a call if you have something you'd like to say or ask. Again, it's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. You single out to some extent in the East Bay a proposal for a golf course in Newark. We're talking about wetlands here.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think, you know, that's one of the handful of stories that we highlight in the report. And I think, and you know, right on the bay, these are lands that are threatened by sea level rise right now. These are lands that, if they are left in a natural state, can help us deal with the threats of sea level rise and essentially absorb the storm surge, the threats that come with with the changing climate. And so to be thinking that we want to, you know, do a golf course and luxury housing on a place like this is, again, I look at that as a very retrograde approach to how we should be treating and handling and utilizing our landscape.
Again, we're talking with Jeremy Madsen, who is CEO of the Greenbelt Alliance, author of At Risk, the Bay Area Greenbelt. And Andrea McKenzie is also with us from Santa Clara Valley's Open Space Authority. She is general manager. And again, we welcome your involvement in the program. You can join us now, 866-733-6786. And we'll go to your calls. I just wanted, Andrea, to get another kind of broader picture of what you're concerned with down there in Santa Clara.
One of the things I think we've realized in such a fast-growing area like Silicon Valley is how important open space and natural lands and agricultural lands are to the future economy in Silicon Valley. And we think of open space literally as infrastructure, just like buildings, roads, bridges, but it's green infrastructure. And our economy actually depends on the health of those natural systems to filter water, clean our air, provide our local food systems, sequester carbon, a whole host of services or benefits that are critical to our sustainability in the Bay Area.
Sustainability is a key word here, but also you've got all this farmland around Gilroy that's mentioned in the report threatened by, well, sprawl proposals.
The breadbasket of what's left of the Valley of the Heart's Delight is from San Jose south down to Gilroy in the San Benito County line. Prime farmland, the best soils for growing our food. And those ought to be places that are protected for that purpose. So we're doing a study right now with support from the state of California, where Governor Brown is actually putting cap-and-trade money into farmland protection studies as a climate change strategy. Because if we can protect these farmlands, we'll reduce future greenhouse gas emissions from development, and we'll save the farming industry that was once one of the largest in the United States.
Well, certainly in this report, a lot comes in about the agricultural economy and how important it is, as you suggest, to keep it sustainable. But let me bring our callers in here. Let me begin with a caller from San Jose. Joan joins us. Good morning.
Good morning. I understand, I hope I'm not mistaken here, that Governor Brown's proposed high-speed railway would go right up the Coyote Valley and cut off the access of the wildlife from the Santa Cruz Mountains to the Diablo Range. I want to know if this is correct, and if so, what could be done about it? Could it be rerouted somehow?
Andrea McKenzie.
Thank you for your call. The high-speed rail alignments are currently being studied, and we are in close contact with high-speed rail about this to bring to their attention the importance of the Coyote Valley for wildlife connectivity. And if that alignment comes through the Coyote Valley, that there will be opportunities to elevate the rail line so it doesn't block wildlife movement. And even enhance wildlife movement if possible. But I think that that's a very timely issue to bring up.
And let me thank you for the call. I got to tell you, if I may, Jeremy Madsen, I was struck by what you were talking about, you know, in terms of zoning as well as development proposals, you know, being a part of this whole picture, but also the sense of development, some of it being an invisible threat. You know, say one day you wake up and you see bulldozers in an orchard or something along those lines. But there are obviously many channels that people can avail themselves of. I mean, you're talking about really people movements here, aren't you?
Right, right. Well, I think, you know, a couple things there. So first, exactly, if you wake up and you see the bulldozers like, you know, in the valley or on the hillside, it's too late. You know, that development is moving ahead. It's going to be very hard to stop. And that's why we do this report, is to give a sense of what does the horizon look like. You know, this is land at risk over the next 30 years. The other piece in terms of like hidden threats, Sonoma County is a great example. And there's been some wonderful successes in Sonoma County over the last 4 or 5 years, probably some of the most successful efforts to protect open space. But nonetheless, there are places where right now you walk out there and you'll see, you know, 100 acres of, you know, undisturbed landscape. That's not threatened necessarily by the, you know, the 4 house to the acre suburban subdivision that we're all, you know, so familiar with. But it's threatened by, you know, one house on every 5 acres or so that really jeopardizes the, you know, the wildlife habitat value of a place or the ability to produce to be used for agriculture or, you know, threatens the water quality of an aquifer just below that. And we see that sort of threat all over our region.
The whole report really addresses, and this ought to be emphasized and highlighted, and you can find the Greenbelt Alliance report on our website, by the way, kqed.org. But, you know, it's not only the beauty of this place where we live and we're fortunate enough and lucky enough to be, but we're talking about fresh food, clean water. We're talking about resources and sustainability and the whole picture, really. And I want to bring more of your calls on. And let me go next to Paul, who's joining us from Martinez this morning. Paul, you're on the air.
Great. I'd like to know what percentage of, say, Contra Costa County is actually open space and actually built up, because I hike regularly in the open space, and there's massive amounts of it, say, between Highway 4 and, say, Orinda, which is certainly not built up, but is not very accessible to people. And I used to belong to Greenbelt Alliance and supported green, you know, supporting open space, and then I left because they said, wow, there's so much of it, but most people don't even know that it's there. How do we make sure that people understand where the open space is and make it more accessible?
Jeremy, can I ask you to address that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, first on the question of percentages, I won't go county by county, but, you know, region wide, we have about 20% of our region is built up of the remaining 3.6 million acres of open space. About a third of that is, as Andrea said, permanently protected. The rest of it is protected, you know, better or worse, by public policies that are put in place by our voters, by our city council people, to keep that land protected and safe. You know, there is a big question around public access. There's we have this incredible parks and open space network in our region, second to none, I think, of anywhere in the country. But there have been funding issues in terms of the ongoing maintenance of that publicly accessible open space or that publicly owned open space. And you know, there are areas that are great for parks, but right now we don't have you know, the money to, again, improve those, put in trails, and to maintain those. Andrea can probably speak to that as well.
Andrea?
Yeah, well, one thing I want to point out is not only do we have a network of more rural open spaces, and many of us are familiar with the Bay Area Ridge Trail or the Bay Trail near San Francisco Bay, but there's also a movement to bring green space and opportunities to connect to nature right into the heart of our urban areas, and this is really, really critical. You're starting to see more open space districts giving grants to cities and nonprofit organizations to connect people, especially in poorer neighborhoods, to green space. It shouldn't be in the Bay Area that a child living in East San Jose will never come in contact with nature in the city, let alone get to the Santa Cruz coast or Yosemite. So that's a really important effort that we're starting to look at, both protecting our wildlands for these services that nature provides and for wildlife habitat and farming, and making sure that our cities are resilient and livable by providing that open space close to home.
Well, in fact, apropos of the question about Contra Costa County, the Greenbelt Alliance report makes the point that the cities that I alluded to before, you know, Brentwood, Antioch, Oakley, Pittsburgh, they can all grow within city boundaries. Mm-hmm. And here's a question from Bill who says, what about greenbelts or parks within the cities? I see increasing densification of cities with no corresponding growth in city parks. I appreciate the densification, but we need green areas to which we can easily walk or bike.
I think that's exactly right. And I think, again, Greenbelt Alliance is a, you know, huge supporter of making sure that we do the right development in the right places, that our new housing is going within our existing cities and towns. But that should be done in a way that makes for great neighborhoods and great places for people to live and be proud of. It's one of the reasons why we've worked with our Association of Bay Area Governments to set up what is called an urban greening program under what are called the priority conservation areas to really focus on our urban parks, our urban creeks.
Let's give a plug for ABAC. They're doing a lot on this score.
They are doing a lot on this. You know, also our urban forests and making sure that we've got the street trees that keep our communities cool and sequester carbon and, again, make where we live absolutely wonderful, livable places.
Another question from a listener says, every potential infill development will draw NIMBY, not in my backyard, reactions. How can these denser developments benefit those who would surely oppose them?
I think the first thing that needs to be done in terms of as we think about and plan for infill is people need to get involved in the process, and not just people who are worried about change in their communities, but people who want to see their communities become better places. You know, development, I think, needs to be used as a tool to make our communities the best they can be versus just seen as something that happens to us.
Let me get a caller on here quickly if I can, and that's you, Timothy. Welcome. Roger, I'm sorry. Roger, go ahead.
Good morning, panel. I'm an Alameda resident, and we are sort of central in the Bay Area. We've had a lot of development in the last 16 years since I've been here. Unfortunately, we still only have 4 bridges and 1 tunnel that get off the island. What we desperately need is another egress or 2 onto the mainland. And so how does Alameda or the counties or the state look at these transportation issues in a creative and holistic way so that we can do our part and everybody benefits?
Yeah. Jeremy Metzen.
Yeah, well, as a fellow Alameda resident, I came through that tube today to get over here. So I know the experience. And I think the thing that we really need to be thinking about is a couple things. What are our transportation options and transportation alternatives? For example, in Alameda, can we invest more in ferry service so that instead of a few ferries every hour during rush hour times, we can be moving back and forth between San Francisco and Alameda and Jack London Square every 30 minutes. Do we invest more in our bus rapid transit around the region, more in bike and pedestrian infrastructure? So I think that's one piece of it. And then also more broadly, looking at just reinvestment in infrastructure, something that we have not done as a nation or a state to the degree that we need to.
And let me thank the caller and remind you that you can find the Greenbelt Alliance report on our website and that you're listening to Forum, and we're talking to Jeremy Madsen and Andrea McKenzie. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. Here's a listener who writes, any discussion of urban sprawl in the Bay Area and California must look at the sources of population growth. The Californians for Population Stabilization Organization attributes almost 100% of the state's growth to immigrants and their children. Unless immigration numbers come down, there can be no solution to the sprawl problem, and we will be forced to witness the growing ugliness of what was once one of the most beautiful places on the planet. Greenbelt Alliance has noble intents, but its silence on this issue guarantees its long-term failure. And you say what, Jeremy?
I first of all, think that statistic is wrong.
100%, I agree.
Yeah, I believe that the reality
but
is—
But it's high. It's very high.
It's high. We do have immigrants coming into California. I think most of our population growth comes from people born right here. But, we really benefit from the diversity, the uniqueness that comes with a diverse population. And so I think, all data shows that we can accommodate our next generation of population growth in a way that is good for our communities, good for our open spaces. And I think that's the focus that we need to have.
And we'll get some more focus on the South Bay from John. John joining us. Morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm calling from down in Morgan Hill, Gilroy area. And I've just been watching the open space down there. They're just vaporized lately. In the past 3 years, the traffic has just gone through the roof. And I'm wondering at the local level, how do you combat, how do you derail these, subdivision McMansions? How do you do that?
Andrea McKenzie.
John, thanks for your question. As I pointed out earlier, clearly you are right in the heart of where most of the future growth will happen in southern Santa Clara County. It's really important to support local officials who want to develop efficiently within the boundaries of the city and work with entities like the Open Space Authority and even the state of California, who have innovative programs now to try and protect farming and farmers on those lands surrounding Gilroy. And to point out, and there's plenty of substantiation for this now, the importance of those lands, not just for farming, but for slowing flooding in these high water events. I'm sure if you go out right now around your community, those some of these areas that have been thought about for future growth are underwater. Floodplains want to be floodplains. So it's important to bring that information to bear on conversations with local officials and get involved with preservation efforts with the Open Space Authority and others.
I was just thinking, Riley, that many of the houses are underwater. I don't mean to make this into a source of humor, but I mean in terms of the mortgage crisis, and that's the terminology that's used. But I only mention that to some degree because you really need a lot more revenue to fight some of these development projects. Our political ties, and there's all sorts of things going on that require more resources for those who are trying to get on board here with you. Here's a question, either for either of you. A listener asks, where and how do you propose keeping the Bay Area affordable to the middle class?
I think that's, again, one of the huge questions we have out there. There's obviously market forces that mean that in a high-income, high-wealth place like this, housing prices are going to go up. And so I think we need to do two or three things. We need to invest in building housing, and housing for at all income levels, for the middle class, for low-income people. That means a diversity of housing types, everything from family-sized housing down to studio apartments. And it also means investing in affordable housing. So, I think Andrea mentioned earlier, Santa Clara County did a great job of putting in place a ballot measure that raises money for affordable housing, and that is, a critical part of the solution.
Well, we'll leave it there. We're talking about solution, and thank you, Jeremy Madsen. Jeremy Madsen, CEO of the Greenbelt Alliance. You can find At Risk, the Bay Area Greenbelt report on our website, kqed.org. Thank you, Andrea McKenzie, also for joining us. She's General Manager of Open Space Authority of Santa Clara Valley. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. And Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, Judy Campbell, and Susan Britton. Engineer is Howard Gelman. Engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. Interns are Stephanie Roberts and Devin Holt. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. And our executive producer is Holly Kernan. For all of us at KQED, I thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.